Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Visions of the Past, a show that brings you news and discoveries from around the world and how it relates to paganism. Now here's your host, William Brigley.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Visions of the Past. It is my pleasure to bring you discoveries from around the world. As many of you know, that Visions of the Past airs on Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. It also airs on International Pagan Radio. Now, recently, our hours on IPR have changed. This was to accommodate our listeners from around the world, now tuning in from no less than 39 countries. When I first started Visions of the Past, I never expected it to take off like it did, from a small article in an e-magazine to what it is today. I have all of you to thank for that. As I always say, my intent on the show is to encourage people to conduct self-research from reliable sources, to become aware of the true stories of our ancestors and how it relates to the history of paganism. You can bet that after each episode, I will post links to the sources to where I obtained my information from on my Facebook page. There you can also find other topics and articles that I haven't talked about on the show, but are equally significant. By all means, feel free to post your comments and share your thoughts. This is what the show is all about: sharing the knowledge of our past and engaging in discussion to help us better understand one another and our history to grow as a global community. Every single aspect of religion tells a different story of our past. When those stories are put together, it begins to paint the bigger picture of humanity, of who we were and who we are today. From the ancient shamans to the first temple builders, from the first writers to the first astronomers, they have all played a role. Much of the knowledge passed down to us from the ancestors can certainly be found in not just what they wrote, but in the structures they built. This is what inspired me to write this topic. The more we think we are the first to create or invent things in our modern-day world, discoveries such as those made in this ancient region surprise us. We quickly learn that our ancestors were far more knowledgeable than most give them credit for, a knowledge that has unknowingly, up until recently, been passed down through the generations. Tonight, I will visit ancient Mesopotamia. But before we begin tonight's topic, let's hear a bit of Mojo Kemp and his song, Human Zoo. We'll be right back, everyone.
a hand. Reach out and help your fellow man. The rich get rich on the backs of the poor. Would you feed that starving man hanging at your door? You may not have a lot to give. An act of kindness gives the will to live. The world can be such a cold, dark place. The way we treat each other, such a disgrace. They're dying in the streets, sunlight bleeding through, belly on their feet, it's a human zoo. Line up for your ticket, grab your seat and enjoy the show. It's a colorful cast of characters, people you hope you'll never know. We're not that far from the edge. Don't be the one to push me off the ledge. Look away, pretend not to see. One bad break, it could be you or me. They're dying in the streets, sunlight bleeding through, belly on their feet, it's a human zoo. Line up for your ticket, grab your seat and enjoy the show. It's a colorful cast of characters, people you hope you'll never know. We're dying in the streets, sunlight bleeding through. We're barely on our feet, we're the human zoo. Line up for your ticket, grab your seat and enjoy the show. We're a colorful cast of characters, people you hope you'll never know.
Listening to Visions of the Past with William Brigley on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for listening. And now, back to William.
Welcome back, everyone. That was Mojo Kemp and his song, Human Zoo. You are listening to Visions of the Past. Tonight's topic is Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization. You might have heard me talk about Mesopotamia before. However, there have been so many discoveries made there, I couldn't possibly encompass it all into one episode. One of the now destroyed archaeological sites in Mesopotamia, or what's now modern-day Iraq, is that of Nimrud. Nimrud was founded during the 13th century BCE and was considered as the second capital of the Assyrian Empire, known as Kalah. The city existed as an important trade center from at least the first millennium BCE. It was located directly on a prosperous route just north of Ashur and south of Nineveh. The city had been built on the location of an earlier business community under the reign of Shalmaneser I, 1274 to 1245 BCE. One of the most famous archaeologists in the world, Sir Austin Henry Layard, began excavations at the ruins of the city of Nimrud in 1845. In his excavations, he discovered what was to be known as the Nimrud lens. The lens could have been used as a magnifying glass with a focal length of about 12 centimeters. Over the years, it has been examined by numerous opticians, many of whom believe it was deliberately manufactured as a lens. Though there is currently no evidence to support that the Assyrians used lenses, either for magnification or for making fire, it is much more likely that this is a piece of inlay, perhaps for furniture. Whatever this lens was used for, it proves that the inhabitants of Nimrud had significant experience working with crystal quartz, because this is exactly what the lens is made out of. Layard undertook a second expedition in 1849, this time focusing on the Koyunjik Mound, which is the site of the ancient city of Nineveh. He also went on to Babylon with brief visits to numerous other sites. But during his stay in Nineveh, he made another miraculous discovery, which was the Library of Ashurbanipal, consisting of some 25,000 cuneiform tablets. Nineveh was one of the most important cultural centers in the ancient world, enjoying a prominent role in the field of developing human civilization, in that it was the greatest metropolis where various branches of arts and learning originated. Among the cuneiform tablets Layard discovered was the first great masterpiece of world literature entitled The Epic of Gilgamesh. With the discovery of the Epic of Gilgamesh, it would change the world forever. I will explain why as soon as we return. So let's hear a little Darn the Bard and his song, The Hills, They Are Hollow. We'll be right back, folks.
Summer's Eve. Some people don't understand when I say these are the things I believe. These are the things I believe. There is an old circle of stones that stands on the moor. Every moss-covered face tells the secrets of ancient lore. The tall stander's guardian, witnesses to the rites, to nature's gods of darkness and of light. And the hills, they are hollow and home to the fae who dance on Midsummer's Eve. Some people don't understand when I say these are the things I believe. These are the things I believe. Sacred land, see the shapes in the corn made by invisible hands. Secrets of the pagan ways lie all around, return upon the earth in rock and sacred mound. And the hills, they are hollow and home to the fae on Midsummer's Eve. Some people don't understand when I say these are the things I believe. These are the things I
listening to Visions of the Past with William Brigley on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for listening. And now, back to William.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Visions of the Past. Before the break, I mentioned that English archaeologist Sir Austin Henry Layard discovered 25,000 cuneiform tablets including the first great masterpiece of world literature called the Epic of Gilgamesh. The world would be changed forever by this discovery because originally Layard's expedition was part of a larger movement at the time to uncover ancient sites in Mesopotamia, which would corroborate stories found in the Bible, specifically in books in the Old Testament such as Genesis and Jonah. The archaeologists who excavated the sites throughout Mesopotamia in the 19th century were seeking physical evidence to support accounts of the Great Flood, the Tower of Babel, and cities such as Nineveh and Calah, among other biblical references. Their work, ironically, would have a complete opposite effect of what was intended. Instead, they discovered a civilization that existed long before the first biblical books were written, one which had in fact produced the first stories concerning a global flood and an ark, and which was far more advanced than had been previously thought. This was not the biblical accounts, but that of Gilgamesh as translated by one George Smith, curator of the British Museum at the time. If you'd like to learn more about the Epic of Gilgamesh, I have a complete episode dedicated to it. But to highlight just a portion of it, the Epic of Gilgamesh recounts the adventures of a legendary king, Gilgamesh, the ruler of the Babylonian city of Uruk around 2700 BCE. He's also credited with erecting the massive wall around Uruk, the first major city. In the epic, Gilgamesh defeats a forest demon, spurns the advances of Ishtar, goddess of love, and falls into despair when his beloved friend Enkidu is struck down by the enraged Ishtar. Abandoning Uruk, Gilgamesh sets off to discover the secrets of immortality. He hopes to learn it from a distant ancestor, Atanapshistim, to whom the gods granted immortality after he survived a great flood that had inundated the earth centuries before. After various travels, Gilgamesh finds Anapishtim, who recounts the story of the flood. The questing hero, however, is denied his heart's desire. The gods will never again confer immortality upon any human. The epic concludes with the king's return home, where he resolves to take comfort in a saga, engraved on tablets and buried in the city walls. In addition to this discovery, in 1932, the British archaeologist Sir Max Mallowan dug 90 feet into the mound of Nineveh, resulting in a pottery sequence dating back to prehistoric times and showed that the site was already inhabited by 5000 BCE. Shortly after this period in history, the Assyrian cities of Ashur and Arbel were settled. Both of them still remain largely unexcavated, and it's believed they still contain priceless treasures. What's also clear is that by 2500 BCE, all three of these cities were well established and were thriving metropoli. This period of history saw the development of the fundamentals of civilization, which included the domestication of animals, agriculture, pottery, controllable fire as in kilns, smelting, and many others. Our bell was one of the very earliest permanent agricultural settlements. Between 4,500 and 2,400 BCE, complex societies appear in the form of cities with craft specialization and writing. These features were associated with the Sumerians, but they quickly spread to other parts of Mesopotamia, including Assyria. Their impact didn't end there. Although the Greeks are often credited for much of what we know about astronomy, it was actually the people of Mesopotamia that had begun to delve into the oldest of sciences as far back as 4000 BCE. They in turn developed their own astronomical culture and passed it on to the Greeks and eventually to our modern world. The Akkadians, who are from northern Babylon, are among the first people credited to have kept astronomical records. Some of their records that still exist today are tables of the positions of Venus around 1500 BCE, eclipse times, and new moon records. Studies have indicated that as records became more complete, the actual recording of events became less important, and the mathematical analysis of existing records that led to the prediction of future events became more important to the society. Around 1000 to 600 BCE, during the late Assyrian period, these people conducted detailed studies of fixed stars and their risings. Zodiacal constellations were established with recognition of the zodiac path of the moon, the sun, and other planets. The seasons of the year were established, and observations and predictions of eclipses were refined. By 626 to 539 BCE, or the Neo-Babylonian period, saw progress towards the division of the zodiac into 12 signs of 30 degrees each. 630 BCE was the start of the most accurate systematic observations of the moon and the planets and their positions with respect of the fixed stars. One of the Babylonian tablets even displays a recording of Halley's Comet during its passing in the year 164 BCE. Besides being credited with developing mathematics, they created the lunar calendar to keep track of time and religious events. Since observation of the stars could help in the prediction of the annual floods, they also believed the same knowledge could predict the fate of people on the earth. This was the basis of their development of astrology. To them, these disciplines were intertwined with magic, religion, and mythology. So each and every one of these advancements had a significant impact on our technological evolution as an overall race. Without these advancements, we would most likely not be where we are today. Now, what about the deities they worshipped? We'll explore that as soon as we return. But first, let's take a little break and hear a little Unique Drive and their song, The Elders.
listening to Visions of the Past with William Brigley on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for listening. And now, back to William.
Welcome back, everyone. That was Unique Drive and their song, The Elders. For a complete lineup of the shows airing on the network and to learn more about our hosts, visit spiritualunityradionetwork.org. We also have Reverend Terry's website at revterrypowerhp.com. For our listeners, our shows airing every week here at CERN are: on Tuesday night, we have Reverend Terry's Power Hours. On Thursday, we have Under a Shady Tree. On Friday, we have Spiritual Wellness and Physical Health. On Sunday, we have Sacred Divergence Radio. And on Monday, we have Visions of the Past with yours truly. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to tonight's episode of Visions of the Past, and to those who listen to the archive. We are discussing Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization. So now that we've explored just a fraction of what the ancient Mesopotamians knew and are credited for contributing to our modern world knowledge, what about their deities? The oldest of the Mesopotamian peoples were the Sumerians, and they were polytheistic in nature, meaning they worshipped many goddesses and gods. Some of these included Nammu, goddess of the primeval sea, the mother who gave birth to heaven and earth, and god of the heavens, leading Sumerian deity from the 4th millennium BCE until the city of Erech began to lose its power in 2500 BCE, Kai, goddess of the earth, and Lil, god of air and storms, son of An and Kai. And Lil is credited with spreading the heavens from earth and therefore described as the father of the gods. Utu, sun god who lights the world with rays from his shoulders. Utu was also the god of justice. Ninhursag, Mother Earth, the source of all life. Enki, lord of water and wisdom. Inanna, goddess of love and war. And Irishkigal, goddess of darkness, gloom, and death. She is also the sister of Inanna. Included in their pantheon in the 3rd and 2nd millennium BCE, there was in fact a mother goddess. The mother goddess was well known in high standing within the hierarchy of gods and was included in numerous texts. For example, in the lamentation over the destruction of Sumer and Ur, or in the tale of lament over Nibiru, she is mentioned together with the highest gods of the Mesopotamian pantheon, An, Elil, and Enki. Sometime in the 2nd millennium BCE, this changes, and people begin to replace her with the healing goddess Gula and the goddess of love and war Ishtar. One of her many functions was associated with pregnancy and childbirth. She guides children when they are still in the womb and feeds them after they have been born. The mother goddess also appears as the creator of humankind. In the Akkadian myth of Atrahasis, the Mesopotamian flood story, Ninhur created humankind by mixing clay with blood of a slain god. And in the Sumerian tale of Enki and Ninma, the two deities compete by creating various creatures out of clay, resulting ultimately in the creation of humans. Nothing is known about the mother goddess's divine patronage. The gods An, Elil, Enki, and Salpe are at times considered to be her husbands. As it turns out, the main city where she was worshipped was called Kesh, a city that has only been mentioned in text but has yet to be located. Because of the mother goddess appearing under so many different names, such as Ninma, the Magnificent Queen, Nintud, Ninhur, Queen of the Birthing Hut, and even at times Belit Ili, Queen of the Gods, she is attested from the early dynastic period until well into the first millennium BCE. Her symbol in ancient Mesopotamia may surprise you. It was the Omega symbol. Sound familiar? So you see, these people who lived in this region had an enormous impact on not just religion, but advancements in technology, skills, mathematics, and even astronomy and astrology. Many of our disciplines today owe themselves to the Sumerians, the Babylonians, and the Assyrians. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight and decide to tune in for next week's episode. Again, if you have any comments, suggestions, or ideas, please feel free to post them on my Visions of the Past Facebook page. We are going to finish off with a little Darn the Bard and his song, Cauldron Born. Good night, everyone. And may you blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.